Blog Talk Radio.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me, Saturdays with Joy Keys, at hotmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Any comments or suggestions, send them over. Now, also, if you've missed a show or you came in the middle, all the shows are archived. You can check them out on Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Google, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. Well, this morning, you know, you guys, I always have these great writers on, and it never amazes me that I am surprised by things. Like, you can always learn something new. Don't think that you know everything. And this writer here definitely took me for a curveball in a couple of her chapters or short stories. She's an ACO Kane Prize finalist. She's garnered fellowships from McDowell, Kimbelio, UCross, and Wurlitzer Foundation, and several others. This is her first book, Walking on Calorie Shells, and it was hailed by the New York Times as a raucous and thoroughly impressive debut, and I agree. And it says, with stories to get lost in again and again. It's a New York Times Editor's Choice Indie next pick, so I'm going to be giving away some copies, as you guys know I do. Good morning, Nana Nkwesi.
Oh, good morning so much, Joy. And I love this. It's Joy in the Morning. I love to have some joy on a Saturday morning. And this is my first time actually being on a call-in show. I've only seen it on television, like Dr. Fraser Crane on Fraser. So this will be an interesting experience. And thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for the listeners, those of you who listen later on, and those of you who call in today. I'm ready.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you. I hope you have a little pancakes with that and some maple syrup. You know, I mean, joy covers only so much. But
I got a little coconut water here, so just in case I'm getting parched, so that I have to do, and then I'll get my little eat on afterwards.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, what do you like for, do you do brunch, and, like, what do you like for your brunch? Like, like where do you go for your brunches?
Oh, my God, Joy, you've just opened the Pandora's box. Brunch is, like, literally my favorite meal of all time.
See, look at that.
Like, okay. Are you a brunch person, too? Are you, like, my kid?
Yes,
folk?
I am a brunch person, and I like cooking. Like, I would love to have people over, but I also like going to different restaurants and trying different brunches at different places, and I definitely have my favorites. What are some of your favorite places to go for brunch?
So let me be honest, right? So I just moved down. I moved in the middle of COVID to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So I'm still trying to find out some of the places.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
You mean where? Okay. No,
yeah.
I know where you are.
I know. You're just hamming it up for the folks. But it's true. I live in Alabama now. And I used to be, like, I was a New Yorker. I was a brunch girl. Like, I would, like, every, you know, there's always a new restaurant and always a new spot to kind of explore. So literally Tom's Diner up the street, which used to have, like lines around the blocks. I used to go there. Like, these are places that were, like, you know, have homages and songs. And those are my brunch spots. And, like, literally walking distance from my house, you know. I used to do brunch like it was a religion. So I love a good mimosa. I love a good chat with the girls. I loved everything about it. I love the mixture of savory and sweet. I love the fact that, like, you know, brunch is living its own, like, kind of, like, bizarro world where it doesn't know whether it's going to be dinner, it doesn't know whether it's breakfast, it's doing the most, it's being extra, it's doing everything. So I'm a brunch person to the max.
Oh, my God, that's so crazy, right? Like, some places they have the breakfasty stuff, like they have the pancakes, the waffles, you know, the sausage, and then other places are doing, like, burgers and, like, fajita type of things, and you're like, what? And depending on what ethnic group type of restaurant you're going to, they have their own little niche of, you know, their foods. So, yeah, it's so many things that you could get. Me, my personal is, like, I love blueberry pancakes. I love waffles.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, some days I do like just omelet. Sometimes I don't want the heavy carb thing, like, but I'll just do the omelet thing. And there's places that give you so much food, like, you can only, like, eat half. Like there's a place called Sabrina's. If you ever come to Philadelphia,
oh,
you got to
nice.
Go to Sabrina's. And, you're going to
nice.
Take a doggy bag out. Yeah. So
I just had a writer, like, another famed short story writer was visiting from Philly, Carmen Maria Machado, and she was talking about, like, the restaurants out there. And I was just like, I need to hire me over to Philly because you guys sound like you are culinary masters over there. I was just like, ugh. I know that there's some good eats out here, so I'm not going to, you know, dog out Alabama, but I just have not necessarily established because I was in my little pandemic pod for the first, you know, year or so that I was here. So now that I'm tentatively peeking my little head from under my turtle shell and you know, I'm going to explore, and then I'll have to get back to you and your audience and let them know what the good spots here to eat brunch. But
yes,
I do a little
we'll
bit of
good
chicken and waffle. So chicken and waffle.
Okay. See, my daughter likes that.
Savory and sweet.
Savory and sweet. Well, let me tell the audience, you are in Alabama, not just moved. She's the professor of English at the University of Alabama. So she didn't just, like, haphazardly, you know, move down there, like, in the middle of pandemic, let me get my southern roots on type of thing. No, she moved there. She has a job. Mom, quote, unquote, you know, like, Mom, I have a job.
I know. Right. That's what, like, all my New York friends are like, Alabama, Alabama, you know. But I was like, they felt that same way when I was moving to Iowa for my MFA. So I'm like, I'm going where opportunities are. I have a tenure track professorship in English, and I'm here. I'm enjoying my students. My graduate students are amazing. I get to talk about literature all the livelong day, much like you do. So I understand, like, the joys of getting to talk about something that you love. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, being a professor, you get new students, you know, all the time. What do you throw on them first when they come in? What's their, like, first assignment when they come to your class?
So it's interesting. So I teach different kind of classes, right? So for my fiction workshops, which are, like, the kind of the core of, you know, our curriculum, I teach graduate students, I teach undergraduate students, but, like, teaching them how to read literature and how to look at writing as not just, like, you know, readers, because it's like a book club and they're just enjoying it, and, like, teaching them how to kind of learn the ideas of the craft, right? So sometimes I just give them, like, little, basically, like, you know, terms list, like, these are literary terms. So and I tell them, like, look, you know, just because I'm speaking in this way, don't worry, you don't need to know all these terms. Like, you don't need to know what point of view is, or you don't need to know immediately what I'm talking about, like, you know, viewpoint or a beating heart or, you know, or the inciting incident, right? What happens is that over the time I'll be using these terms, and you will know intuitively that that's something that you always knew was important to a story, and now you'll have the terms for it. So I just get them, you know, situated in the vernacular, and, like, so they understand that you are, like, you know, this is your toolkit. You are now a technician. You're not just an enjoyer, like a layperson of reading. You're reading to see what you can emulate, what you can, you know, take and even do better. So that's what, you know, that's your eyes are constantly looking for those. Like, how can you replicate that magic on a page?
And what types of authors, I mean, what authors do you suggest? Say you're talking to somebody who's in high school right now. What should they be reading if they want to be a writer, like they see themselves in the future to be a writer like you?
Oh, my goodness. I actually have, like, a whole reading list for, like, you know, new collegians, just telling them to read very widely and read very wildly, right? I literally, like, tell them not necessarily the exact books I think they should read, though I do a little bit of that too, but I do suggest that the types of books, like, so they could have a range of reading experiences, right? I tell them to see themselves in different cultures, to read books by women, to read poetry, you know, because I, you know, what happens sometimes is people get a niche and they're just like, oh my God, I only like such and such, right? I grew up, I've been reading and writing stories since I was 9 years old. So when I was 9 years old, I was writing little fan fiction before I knew what fan fiction was. Fan fiction of myself in space with Uhura, Uhura, <I'm sorry. laughs> you know, right? So I was doing that, and I was also doing, you know, writing stories about Regency England because Lizzie Bennet from Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice was my imaginary bestie. So I tell them to read very widely and not to get stuck on genre, not to get stuck on, you know, any particular author. I think that, you know, you can have your favorites, of course, but, you know, because I do have, like, you know, we all go through different points in our life. Like, you couldn't tell me, like, Toni Morrison's still, like, GOAT, you know, you had that little GOAT promo in the beginning, still GOAT in my mind. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, all these people who, like, first introduced me to magical realism in college when, you know, like, so I was like, oh, I can do literary stuff and still do my weird sci-fi spooky stuff, too. I just love the idea of that, you know. That was the first time I saw that because I had to, like, you know, I loved all my, like, speculative fiction stuff growing up, but I was just like, oh, but people poo-poo that and they don't necessarily know, and I have a preoccupation with words and wordplay, so when I started coming into more writers who were doing both of those things, it was just like magical for me. So it was my magical realism, the magical realism of the magic. So I tell them to please, you know, not get caught up in it's, you know, in like what people say you should read what close your boat and try to read as widely as possible. So, like, there's literally a list. Like, read some Shakespeare, like, you know, something that's canonical. Read like, you know, about, like, scientific, you know, like, scientific and historical books. So I told them, like, on the last list I sent out to a class, I said, read, like, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, you know, and learn about, like, this black woman who's, you know, DNA and was at the center of all major scientific developments in these last century, you know, last century or so. So these are the kind
It's interesting you bring that up because, you know, in this book, you know, you're talking about like misconceptions and the one story, you know, I mean, there's a story in there that's the scary story, if you will. Is this a scary story? I don't know. It just kills you inside.
Yes,
I guess it depends on the person.
It depends on who's reading it. Sorry. Did I go ahead and give away the plot line? You're like,
go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I said, because I said zombies, and I was just like, oh, Joy was probably trying to, like, leave some breadcrumbs to get people to that scary story conclusion, but go ahead.
No, but the scary thing is the first page when it says some of it is true. That's you know, so then it's like, well, what part is true? You know what I'm saying? So, but let me ask you, because the audience is probably like, okay, y'all talking about brunch, y'all talking about this. What is this book about? Talk to the audience, just a little brief. What is the book about? And are you able to read any of the book today? I don't know if you got that email.
No, that's okay. I sent you a confirm this morning as well, and I can read some portions of the book as well. The book is like it's a collection of short stories which crosses genres. So as Joy and I have been talking about, like, I love magical realism. So there's a magical realist story in it which literally references Gabriel Garcia Marquez and has that kind of wonderful, like, you know, quiet as is kept kind of voice to it. And it's a Mami Wata, which is like an African mermaid, you know, and explores like mermaid lore across the world. There's the story that Joy is saying, give her a little chills and you wonder, is this real? Is this live? Is this Memorex? That's It Just Kills You Inside. That's a zombie apocalypse story where it's unfolding on the continent of Africa, but you don't really know who the monsters are because you have so many people coming in, like big pharma and big agro and people and all these spin meisters who come in and take these zombies and they use them for their own ends. So that's talking about the ideas of like, you know, what is blackness and who gets to decide, you know, when something is an illness or, you know, talking about the denigration of African. Yes, exactly. I have stories that are, you know, set in the church, you know, where I'm like, you know, and I'll be reading a little bit from that today, like The Devil's Liar, which is a mother and daughter who are dealing with their, you know, a family crisis, and they're kind of trying to hearken to their own spiritual identities. One of them is married to
a pastor in a big black mega church, and then the mother is coming from her own Afro-Christian spiritual warfare, where there's a mixture of like the old school ancestral beliefs and ancestor worship, and like, you know, and like a little bit of juju tinged into the Christianity. So, I mean, I feel like I have a story at Comic-Con, you know, where it's like a young girl who's trying to figure out, hey, I want to be a graphic novelist. I want to write graphic novels, and like what to my friend who's I have a crush on, and he's an illustrator. But my African parents are going to be like, no, you got to be a lawyer, doctor, engineer. So all these stories deal with, you know, with like, you know, ideas of like, you know, people who are in like walking on cowrie shells, which is basically my way of saying like, you know, walking on eggshells, and I'm taking it to cowrie, which is a very iconic African image, was, you know, was used by a currency across the continent. But walking in cowrie shells just basically means that people are trying to become something. They're in liminal spaces. They're trying to understand who they want to be, who they are. So they're a little bit tentative and unsure. And that's the human condition. It's universal, right? We're all trying to figure out something. Like, we're literally in the middle of a pandemic trying to figure out, man, what means the most to me? Like, why should I get up in the morning, especially when the morning has been tinged by this dystopian landscape? So we're all dealing with that right now. So,
yeah. So you're going to read the part from the church?
Yes, I can read. Okay. You know, you can. I'm going to read a bit of the Devil is a Liar, but I can also read something from another piece if you'd like as well after I finish this section.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Yes, go ahead. Proceed.
Okay. So the Devil is a Liar. There are hymns, there are hymns, there are hymns, there are hosannas, there are hallelujahs. There are some who are struck dumb in his presence, and those who are newborn linguists, speaking in tongues. Eyes roll heavenward, limbs grow palsied, tears of joy, of penitence, of defiance are shed. Through this sound and this fury, Sister Glory and Gaston, Minister of Music for the New Africa International Church of the Holy Redeemer, Brooklyn Battalion, is praying fervently. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, O Alpha and Omega. Thank you, O Heavenly Father. Thank you, O Merciful One. Glory glorifies and magnifies the Almighty for the miracle he has wrought in the life of her daughter, Temperance. Glory's voice, once whispery, rises, then rises again, as she sways to the unsung chorus, moving the faithful 20-person flock present for service that Sunday morning. And faithful they are to this fledgling church, its sanctuary, a dusty Brooklyn apartment, a donated space that was still undergoing a slow renovation that had spanned from Easter Sunday the year prior and might go into an unknown future, unto the end of days, perhaps. The congregation is sanguine in their shared burdens. Tried and tested, they will not be found lacking. So one had to watch one step on the steps on the unfinished floorboards, a mere reminder that Jesus himself was a carpenter, a man who knew the grain of cedar, of poplar, of acacia, and even of the bitterest wormwood. So the single-pane windows were unsealed and unshielding. Their translucent tarp coverings fluttered in the draft like a host of angels' wings. Yes, the congregants of the New African International Church of the Holy Redeemer know that they are blessed because their leader, man of God, Pastor Godlike Love Akonde, had journeyed all the way from church headquarters in Cameroon to share his special anointing. That very moment, the good pastor is laying hands on the forehead of Brother William, tippering all 6 feet of the man into the waiting arms of Sister Anna, chanting, by the Spirit of Christ, by the body of Christ, by the blood of Christ, raining down rapid fire, holy fire, to break the ancestral curses that had kept the good brother from receiving his promotion, his increase. And now music, now songs of praise and thanksgiving. Glory steps forward and she pushes up her plus 1.5 drugstore reading glasses. Perhaps it was time for a plus two, and she peers down at the hand-assembled hymnal that she had made, the photocopied fruits of her labors to harvest gospel songs from across the continent, Nigeria's Agatha Moses, Cameroon's Tribute Sisters. Jesus, we love you, Lord. You don't make me life better. God, we're going to thank you forevermore. Thank you, Baba. Oh, Lord. Sister Anna is always flat. The congregation is singing, and they are held and swayed by the baton of glory's pointer finger, keeping time, tap, tap, tapping notes in the air. She is gratified because she knows in her very marrow that their voices are pleasing to he who mattered utmost. You see, Glory knows the power of church music. In over 30 years of searching for a church home, she had been to many houses of worship and had come to know the quality of a church not by the size of the hats on the church lady's head or the crisp white gloves of its ushers. She knows a church by its music, by the way its people raise their voices in gratitude. Praise Jesus. She knows the Pentecostals love a good tambourine, a jangle, rejoicing. While Catholics crave a holy hush, hums of contemplation. While the Southern Baptists were one for gambolin and holy rolling, lovers of big voice belters, soul claps, and organ riffs that settle on the sermons of their high-stepping reverends like a hype man's cape across the shoulder blades. For Glory, for his glory, the music had to be especially right that day because she is bursting with a mighty testimony. All right, I'll end it there.
Well, let me tell you, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in that story she didn't even get to. Yeah, she didn't even get to have it. But I do love the variety, and that's what keeps me liking the book. Short stories, you know, it's not just like one long story together. So if you're not liking this story that she just read, there's a lot of other things going on in there. There's stuff for the youth. There's stuff for the mercenaries and the zombies. There's stuff people liking the mermaids. She's also getting political in there. You're talking about, you know, domestic violence issues. In the book, and you're talking about, you know, I guess ethnic prejudices because your background, you're Cameroonian American yourself, and you bring that into the book and what that means to be African and American, like in American schools, and the prejudice that you're faced by African Americans. So there's a lot of topics that if you don't like one, you could be like, let me go to chapter this. And, you know, figure out maybe I'll like that one. But either way, I think they're it keeps you on your toes because it's the same writer. And that's the cool part. It's still you, Nana, and you have all these thoughts in your head. That's what I think is cool, you know?
Well, my friend has described me as Whitman-esque because I contain multitudes. And I think we all contain multitudes, right? We're all like, you know, we could go from talking about brunch to talking about literature today, you know, because that's how we are. Like, you know, our lives are increasingly hashtag. People who used to be, like back in the day, they used to silo you and say, oh, you need to only write this or you need to only do this. And I'm so glad that I'm coming and my book is coming out and at a time where, you know, we're breaking past those genre limitations and people are understanding that, look, the same writer and the same person has so many different experiences. You know, you have, I think women in particular, like, you know, you wake up in the morning, you can be mother, you can be wife, you can be your employee, you can be girlfriend, you can be sister, you can be freedom fighter, you can be everything. So I think people are used to wearing many hats in their everyday life. So why shouldn't their literature reflect that?
So now where can people find you online? What's your hooks on Instagram and things of that nature so if they want to look you up?
Oh, I try to keep things simple and not, you know, I'm frightening people like, you know, like, oh, I got to put down at literaturegoddess.1234, you know. It's basically just at Nana and Quitty. So that's at, you know, that's at N-A-N-A, like your grandma, you know. the K-W-E-T-I. So that's my handle for Instagram. That's my handle for Twitter. And then my website is also www.nanaandquetti.com. So, you know, I try to keep that branding.
People.
There you go. Like, I like try to keep it consistent so people are not looking for like 15 different, you know, even though as much as hashtagging as I like, for coherency with the branding, if people just know exactly where to catch me, you know, and if they want to learn more, there you go.
There you go. Well, I'm going to give away, like I said, some copies of your book. So I want to encourage everybody to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. On Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. And also, you can email me, and that's how you're going to win the prize, by emailing me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Well, Nana, this has been great. And next time we talk at the next book, you're going to have to tell me the best brunches in Alabama, okay? That's your assignment.
I promise. I will take that assignment very seriously because not a lot to eat, especially brunch, like I said. So, you know what? I love the fact that you're actually, you know, engaging with your audience and your readers with book giveaways. You know, I actually have a tote bag that I can throw in the mix as well. So I will send you images of that tote bag, and I will send you one of them tote bags. So you let me know what's a guan with the winners, and I'll say
what's
a guan.
Okay.
Well, I was in Brooklyn and I was Ja Rastafari. So let me know what's a guan with that, and you just go ahead and we'll put that in the mix. And I love the fact that that the books will be in willing and happy hand.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much. And you can go back to sleep now, or walk the dog, or read a book, or grade papers.
Pick up my eyeglasses.
All right, pick up the glasses. Have a great weekend, okay?
You too. Thank you so much for having me. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, I'm going to give away some prizes, so follow on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook for a chance to win the book. And the author just put in a tote bag, so keep your eyes out. You can win a tote bag, the book, maybe both. You never know. Stay tuned. I'm going to be speaking with singer, musician Judith Hill, so don't go away.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.